Hello, Stackers, and welcome to another World Builders episode. It's been a while since I've done one of these, but every time I get back to one, I think, boy, I really miss doing this because it's fun to hear what other people are thinking about and working on. But it's also great to know what kind of world ideas are out there. Today, I want to introduce my special guest, Pavel, who is joining us. Before we get to his introduction, I do want to say that we somehow shanghaied him a little bit from the Tales from the Glass Guarded World Discord server. When Mike, the DM of that podcast, recommended us, Pavel was quick to jump on it, and we're thankful that he has joined us because he's had a lot of funny insights and great things to contribute. So I've appreciated having you here, Pavel, if you take a moment to introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Pavel or Pavel. I moved to Texas from Russia, so any variation of my name is totally fine, and I will answer to it. There is no canonical correct way to pronounce my name. So yeah, I've been playing D&D for, actually don't remember exactly when I first started, but at least a decade at this point. I'm a big fan of listening to D&D actual play podcasts, obviously Stack of Dice, Tales from the Glass Guarded World, as Rhett mentioned. And I finally am feeling ambitious enough to start my own. And in that podcast, I'll be running my own homebrew world, which is my own in the very strict sense that I definitely stole the idea from someone.
But, like all good DMs, yes.
Exactly.
Great. Well, I'm excited to hear more about what you have to share. So let's talk a bit about you've already mentioned your experience about a decade of role-playing games. Is that all D&D or other systems mixed in?
It's mostly D&D, and when I DM, which is mostly what I do, I don't get much of a chance to be a player. I prefer D&D not for any specific reason, but mostly because I know the system very well, and I feel confident in my ability to tell a good story in that system, and to also, possibly even more importantly, to be able to onboard new players who are new to tabletop role-playing games into that system.
Okay, and did you start with 5th edition? If it's been a decade, then probably not.
You know what? I actually don't remember. I know I played a game with a friend of mine and a neighbor, and I genuinely cannot recall if it was 4th edition or 5th edition we played, because I don't remember any one specific thing that felt like, oh, this is definitely 4th edition, or, oh, no, this is definitely 5th edition. But I don't have any memories of anything besides 5th edition.
Gotcha. Yeah, for me, it was 2nd edition way back in the early 90s, and then a little bit of 3, and then some 4, and then 5 is where I really got back into it. Good. Yeah, it's good to know what kind of experience you're coming from, so that's helpful. All right, so let's talk world building. You mentioned in our brief informal discussion with Mike in a recent special episode of his that you came across an idea and you've basically taken that, but then you're putting your own stamp on it. So if you can describe generally what idea you're approaching, and then from there we can start talking about the various things that you're doing with it.
Sure. So the original idea came from a Reddit post, and I'll share a link so you can share it with your listeners. It was an idea called Scroll World. And in that world, it was effectively physically a scroll that looped around. And I'm making hand motions as if anyone can see this.
So like a donut, basically?
Yeah, kind of. And it rotates. And on the front side, there is the more or less our standard fantasy world. I think in their version on the back, that was where, like Avernus and all the demons lived. And I love the idea of a world that is constantly moving, where people cannot stand still, on our planet Earth. Things are very cyclical and things come and go. There's day cycles, year cycles. On Scroll World, there is nothing. Nothing like that. Everything is always kind of renewing itself. And one of the things I didn't like is that this person's world did renew itself. So I thought to myself, being a big fan of science fiction, I thought to myself, let's think about this more cosmologically. What if it never repeated itself? What if the world is infinitely long, and the habitable zone just keeps moving in a direction that I just call south, just because of, I don't know. I grew up in the West. Maps point, south is down. So.
Right, exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's this infinitely long tube made of earth, or made of soil, made of, planet stuff, with the sun spiraling around it in a very, not Copernican, what's the other?
Galilean.
Yes, thank you. So the sun spirals down at a pretty slow pace. However, it does not stop. You always have to be moving south, at least on some sort of a regular cadence. So what this means is there are no temples or castles or anything that's 100,000 years old, because if something's 100,000 years old, it's way up in the north, frozen.
Yeah.
You know, it's once again kind of sci-fi world. When you get far enough from the sun, even the atmosphere falls as snow, and the only thing that flows is liquid helium. So yeah, this is a world where everyone's always moving. Either they make a mad dash every 50 or 100 years, or people just kind of move at a walking pace, and it's slow enough to support that. It's also a world where environmentalism is not really a thing. There's no sense in conserving anything because there's always fresh soil. There's always going to be fresh forests to grow. I mean, as far as anyone knows, at least.
Yeah. Okay. So very, very fascinating concept. I like the idea. It does cause some immediate questions to pop up. And if I'm venturing into stuff that you haven't explored yet or just don't want to get into, that's fine. But some first thoughts. First of all, does the world itself rotate? You said the sun spirals around it. So is the world also twisting?
You know, I haven't thought about that yet. I don't know if the constellations are always just frozen in the sky or not. I don't know. I'm gonna have to decide that, I guess, at some point.
Because I suppose that would have some effect on gravity and all that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It's already kind of hard enough to think about this infinitely long world, especially in a fantasy setting where I can't always just say, yeah, magic, so it works.
Right, right. Yeah. And again, I know that you're going to have plenty of other details to worry about. So some of these are probably not all that big a deal. But that came to mind. Also, just the notion of people constantly on the move. And we talked some about the interesting aspects that would impose on basically the entirety of the people on this planet. For one thing, are you expecting there to be like tribes that or people that live kind of on the fringe, maybe in the colder areas where they have some more protection, where they might move to those colder climates in order to basically have an extra layer of defense? People don't wander that far outside the habitable zone.
Oh, definitely. There's definitely people living in the north who are just always just, you know, a couple of, I mean, not physically a couple of steps away from freezing, but they stay in the north because they want to. There's always this huge arid environment in the middle. Some people stay there because nobody particularly likes to pass through that spot. Some people just always stay in the south where, again, it's just as cold as it is in the north, but the south has an added difficulty of people always trying to migrate south to kind of, you know, stake out the new land, you know, plant their flag, quickly build a defensive fortifications of some kind before somebody else comes and takes it. But yeah, there's every niche that humanity has settled on Earth is maybe not thriving, but it's certainly inhabiting in Skrull World as well.
Okay. How about like divided people? So maybe once upon a time they were one people, but then through movement or whatever, they become separated by that arid zone and they either don't have the ability to get across to each other or don't care to. You could have some like lost tribe kind of stuff going on there. That might be an interesting thing.
So I've not explicitly thought about that, but I just grabbed a piece of paper and pencil. I'm going to write that down because that is a great idea. That's a great thing to explore.
Because then you could have like related people coming back together at some point, perhaps.
You know, the geography and geology also emerges from the south. It's entirely possible that the mountain range just slowly starts appearing one day and just splits a village and then disappears after 100 years and suddenly there's a huge reunion. That sounds like a great instigating like plot hook. Like, oh, like these people are coming back together and y'all are, congratulations players, you're right in the middle of it.
Something else is, because this is a north to south movement in our mental map that we've made, what happens if a ruin appears in the south?
You know, then my players get to explore it. So that is one thing I have not yet decided on, whether anything should come out of the south, because that obviously implies that we're not the only people in the world. There must be other suns further south where other people live, and this, you know, ruin, this castle, this thing, maybe this creature happens to have survived it. So I have not yet decided whether that will ever happen in my game. I'm leaning towards yes, just because that sounds fun. And, you know, it's a game. Fun is the whole point. So
Sure. And if you don't mind going into some of the things that you have considered for this world, you've talked broad strokes about the, you know, the movement of the sun, about the climate zones and that sort of thing, but are there any other little details that you put in already that you're willing to share?
Oh, so much. I don't think that we have enough time for me to share everything. I mean, I will gladly talk about this for 3 hours. This is going to be a special 3-hour episode. I've got notes. I've got pages of notes. I have notes where, like, I literally have one page, two pages side by side. One is answered questions and one is unanswered questions. Answered questions is about 2 paragraphs. Unanswered questions spans all the way down. Like, one thing that I do not know how to decide is, how far away is the sun? Is it 93 million miles away like on our world? If it is, can it orbit that quickly around the cylinder? If it's closer, can it actually be a sun as we understand it? Maybe it's a red dwarf, so it's close enough to orbit quickly, giving us about a day, but not completely scorching the surface. I have not decided. Every time I run the game, I secretly live in terror of all my players asking, hey, how far away is the sun? Because I have to say, that sounds like a great thing to ask a librarian. The nearest library is about 2 sessions away, because that gives me enough time to find some friends who know physics and ask them a lot of embarrassing questions.
Yeah, you are obviously an experienced DM. I appreciate that.
Yeah, but I've been thinking about this world for, genuinely years at this point. I have list of questions. I have a list of answers. I have a list of I have a lot of thoughts about, you know, the kind of cultures and peoples that live in the world, and a lot of them have a lot of things like for example, I want to kind of get away from the orcs being this like savage race that did nothing but attack, but I wanted to keep them kind of dangerous and, you know, potentially a threat. So in my world, orcs have this rich oral tradition, and they basically can never forget anything they've ever sang. So they, in every orcish settlement that's big enough, there's basically always someone singing their entire history over and over, almost like on a loop, and that's how they learn their history. And in my world, I guess slight spoiler alert, orcs know more about the history of the world than absolutely anyone. And you can ask an orc, walk into an orcish village, and assuming that you haven't upset them in some way, you can ask them, hey, what happened, you know, 10,000 years ago? And they'll go, hold on, humming that bit of the song. Okay, blah, 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 blah. And they'll tell you exactly what happened, because that's how the recall works.
So you're going to sing in-game, right?
Oh, yeah, full musical episode. I'm not a coward. I will hereby commit to a full musical episode, episode 1. I'm kidding. I would not do that. Yeah, but I'm also, I have that kind of defined for almost all the species, for the major playable species. But at the same time, I don't want to limit my players. I don't want them, if somebody wants to play an orc, I don't want to tell them, okay, well, here's your option. You can be an orc from a village where they sing, or you can be an outcast for some reason. I'm trying to keep in mind that, much like on Earth, there are some general statements you can make about, let's say, a country. Let's say, there are some general statements you can make about Germany and the people who live there, but that's not going to describe every German.
Right.
And there's lots of ways to be human, and there's lots of ways to be an orc or a dwarf, and that goes double for players who are always meant to be these exceptional heroes. They are playing these characters because there is something different, something interesting about them. So I'm trying to strike that balance.
Yeah, and I think your players will respond to that very, very readily. That's excellent. We did have some limitations at the beginning of our campaign also, as far as magic goes and that sort of thing, and even limits on playable races. But the players have never griped about it once, and it's been wonderful to see them slot right into the rules that they've picked and make them their own. So I think your players will do very much the same.
Yeah.
Players appreciate choice.
Yeah. The very first thing we're going to be recording in a couple of weeks is effectively kind of a character and world building bit, where I want them, I want to be present to answer questions about how the world works, how their character ideas might fit into that world, and give me a chance to practice some editing and see if I can stand to listen to myself talk for an hour or five.
It gets better, I promise. Yeah, and don't forget that on our Discord server, we have the technical editing channel, and we are happy to talk editing. It sounds like you have some experience with that already.
Not so much. Okay. Tiniest amount. I've made maybe 3 or 4 music videos, kind of for work, but mostly for fun for work. So I know a little bit about editing, but I've never edited anything like a podcast before. Okay. But I will definitely take you up on the offer, and also everyone else who's also made similar offers in the various other podcasts I listen to.
Yeah, great. And I think what you'll find for me, yeah, it's work, editing. It's a time sink sometimes, but it sure is a creative outlet that that I appreciate. I was not expecting it to be as mentally rewarding as it has been. So I hope you find it to be the same.
I'm very much looking forward to finding out.
It's a growth opportunity. It's neat to see where these games take us. We're doing it for fun, but there are some actual benefits that come from it. So I hope you find it to be your case also. Let's see, other things about your world. If you were to pick maybe the top three things that you're most looking forward to getting your players into, could you summarize those?
So I'm also running a non-recorded version of this game, and I'm not sure which set of players will run into this, but I do have the set of characters in my mind that my players will run into, and I don't think any of them will listen to this, so I'll just go ahead and say it. So, spoiler alert for anyone who's in one of my games, fast forward, let's say, a minute or two. I want them to find a library which has books, and if you open those books, they release these fae creatures, which are dreams, and they will come to my players in dreams, and I will roll to see whoever gets these dreams, and they all want something from the players, and those things are all very different, and only one of them is going to make it clear that what they're trying to make is a deal. And they will the others will mislead the players, and none of them are necessarily they're not hostile. They've just been trapped in these books for a long time, and they want to know what's out in the world. And so each player is going to have their own dream to kind of contend with and figure out how to strike this bargain of getting some of the benefits that the dream will offer while also not being completely overtaken by the negative effects that the dream
will
have.
That's a really neat idea, yeah.
And I've got voices for them all. I've got their characteristics all thought out. I've got names for them. Sometimes if I'm just driving along, we have a camera in my car, and I'm sure that if somebody goes through it, I'm going to sound absolutely insane because I'm just saying the most bonkers things out of context in these weird voices.
Yeah, oh, that's perfect. You know, that's a neat narrative way to work in stuff like the pact that a warlock has or the boon that some advanced characters can pick up. So yeah, I think that's a great way of introducing that and adding an element of mystery and maybe eeriness to everything. So that sounds like a great hook.
Yeah.
What else?
One of the things I want them to explore, and my off my game, they do a great job of this. I want them to think about the different factions in the world. Because obviously, much like in the real world, there are going to be conflicts between peoples, and they're going to have to either pick sides or try to make sure that everyone gets what they want, or I mean, entirely possible, just opt out the whole thing and say, "Nope, this is y'all's problem. Y'all figure it out." But the off my game, they have been very good about that, about very explicitly, both in character and out. Discussing, you know, what are we really doing? Like, do we actually want to help these pretty morally ambiguous people? Do we want to help this other faction that itself seems like maybe what they want is not really best for everyone involved? And I really love it when they're, this sounds very kind of, I guess, mean to say, but I love watching them agonize about the decisions that they're having to make.
Well, that's the DM's gift, or I guess reward, is when you see players agonizing, that means that they're invested in the game. It means that you have presented them with something that they're actually giving thought to. So to a DM, it should be a sign that you're being effective in what you're doing. Just like when I see Meredith or Michael reacting, their face reacting to something that I describe. Boy, that's such a rush to know, wow, something I said just hit a nerve or something.
Yeah.
And so when you get that kind of response, that's something that we should be enjoying. So I'm glad you're seeing that. That's a great sign that you're on the right track.
Yeah. It's the very last session we had, I gave them a puzzle to solve. That's, That's kind of a clue to the MacGuffin they've been carrying around for 10 sessions without cracking it open. I could not believe that they have not cracked this thing open. It's a physical artifact. I actually paid an artist to make the physical artifact because I was going to bring it in. I brought it into a session about 5 sessions ago and just waiting for them to crack it open, but they didn't. And the reason they did not crack it open is because one of the characters was told to never, ever, ever open this book. Oh, it's a book. And true to his character, he did not crack open the book. And on the one hand, I'm very proud because absolutely that's exactly what his character would do. His character would completely follow those instructions, doing what he believes is best, trying to get that book back to safety. But me as a DM, I'm like, come on.
Open it. Come on.
Yeah. Just crack it open. Just look at the first page. Nothing bad will happen. It will hurt. Actually, he will have to make some saves if he ever cracks that book open. But I think next session is going to be fun.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds like a lot of good stuff coming to your off mic game, but also perhaps in store for your actual podcast. And speaking of podcasts, then what are your plans?
So I don't want to say too much because there is always a chance that one of my players will hear this. And I also want to keep listeners because I'm just going to say it. I'm going to advertise my podcast in your Discord and Mike's Discord everywhere. And I want y'all to experience the mystery as well. Uh-huh. But I will say that, much like you said, the best DMs steal ideas all the time for their games. So I stole the idea of Squirrel World and made my own. I am going to be adapting a very classic horror work, but also through the lens of an album the band made based on that work. So for the past week, basically, I've been listening to that album on repeat, just trying to mine every bit of inspiration out of it. So it's going to be a mystery, and this is going to deal with this existential threat that is coming to everyone who lives on the world.
Okay.
So they're not going to realize how big the threat is at first, but I'm just going to throw them right into the deep end. Do the right thing or literally everyone dies.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. What better hook could there be? Mm-hmm. And so for your podcast, let's talk, when do you expect that you'll get started, or how long do you expect it to last?
So we're recording our first kind of session zero. I'm probably going to release it as episode zero. We're recording that April 14th, and I want to record at least 3 sessions and edit them and have them ready to go. And I told my players that there is a non-zero chance that I hate editing, or maybe I will hate some other part of the process, and maybe this will just never get released. Maybe this will just be audio that lives on my hard drive until I die. And that's fine, right? It's meant to be fun. If I do hate editing, I don't want to spend 8 hours per episode doing something I hate. I would rather just continue the game off mic with them because I am genuinely really excited about this game. I think this is actually advice you gave. Consistency is one of the top 3 things. I want to make sure I have enough audio recorded to release at least a month's worth of content. Probably, statistically speaking, this isn't going out until this fall.
Okay.
But depending on how schedule lines up, depending how excited everyone is, depending how quickly I edit, maybe summer.
Okay. And is this going to be an in-person game, or will you be doing it over remote?
We'll be doing it remotely. It's kind of funny. These are all my former coworkers. 2 of them live in the city, not too far away from each other. And one of them actually moved into my town. So I can walk to her house in about 10 minutes. But we can't exactly commute to the city every time we want to record. So it's going to start being a remote game at first.
Well, that's actually going to work to your benefit, you'll find, because when you get their tracks, they're already clean with us.
That's
because
true.
We're all in the same room. We're spending, my estimate is 8 hours of editing for every hour of recording time. Because we're
That's
cleaning
horrifying.
Individual tracks, and because then once we have the tracks clean, then we have to compress them into one, and then I do the final run on that. So you're already cutting out probably 6 of those hours.
That's true.
By doing it remotely.
I do live in terror of the fact that because I'm not going to be there in person, I'm afraid that one of them is not going to have their mic correctly hooked up. They're going to send me just, an hour of just silence.
There is that. There is that. Yeah. especially at first, we were, after a couple of botched recording sessions, we we became paranoid. And I would literally watch as we were recording to make sure I was seeing sound waves registering on all four tracks. And boy, it was, we lost a couple of early episodes that we had to re-record. And of course, they went completely differently as a result. The one that Michael always comes back to is the fight against the bear lady in episode 5 or 6. And it was an awesome fight the first time around. And the second one was just not the same.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It's hard to recreate that, you know, that kind of authentic energy if you know you just, oh, okay, take two, let's do it.
Yeah. But, you know, if you're very careful up front and you make sure that your players are seeing sound registering on their end, there's really little that can go wrong. So,
yeah. Good. And that's one of the reasons I'm going to be recording this kind of like session zero character building thing is so that when I get the audio, if we lose that, then, you know, it's sad, but it's not a tragedy. It's not something we'd have to re-record.
Right, right. All sorts of interesting things going on. Is there anything else that you would like to either plug or talk about before we wrap this one?
Ooh, I guess it would be silly to plug your podcast on your own podcast feed. And I'm assuming most of them are probably familiar with Tales from the Glass Cart of the World, but maybe not.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt to make mention of that. And in particular, because you appear on it a couple times. And
that's true.
I still remember on the Pirate Island when they ran into Pavel the Bone Fancier. And I was like, oh, that's such a cool name. And then only to find out that, oh, there's a fancy bone. Okay, I got it.
I told Mike that if there's ever a Tales from the Glass Cart of the World convention, I will go in costume as the Bone Fancier. Unfortunately, the Bone Fancier was a halfling, and I'm about 6 foot tall. So,
okay,
you know,
gotcha.
It'll be an interpretation of the character.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Just walk around on your knees. You'll be fine.
I guess I'll plug Mike's podcast, Tales from the Glass Cart of the World. It's a tremendously good podcast. It's a clean podcast, which I know your listeners would appreciate. Mike himself has made a tremendously cool world.
Yes.
He's thought it out. There's a lot of very fun stuff going on. Most of which I can't say anything about because, a lot of it is a mystery until the end of season one. And
that's right.
It is worth it. It is very good. And Mike himself has also been tremendously kind in helping me with my podcast dreams, letting me be a guest on his show. Anyway, check it out. Tales from the Glass Cart of the World. It's very good.
Yeah. Fully agree. It's been a real pleasure to get to know both you and Mike through this collaboration that we've been doing. So it's great. And also, if you're at all interested, Stackers, there are a couple of episodes coming up. Pavel and I have been part of a separate special series, we'll say, because it hasn't been released yet. And I think that's as far as we'll go. But if you're looking for more voice time with us, you can find us on that in the upcoming, I think it's next month that is coming out in April, I think he said.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're recording the second part, I think tomorrow, right?
Yeah, tomorrow evening, right. So I'm not going to take down my setup. It's going to stay right here. Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us. You've shared some really neat things with us. I'm excited to see it come off the way you're hoping it will, and I'll be supporting you on the sidelines, cheering you on.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Stackers, what do you think? Has the discussion about Scroll World sparked any ideas for you, any questions? We would love to hear from you. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Stack of Dice. You can email us at stack.o.dice@gmail.com. And you can find us, of course, on our Discord server. And we've got that posted in the profile of our Twitter and Blue Sky profiles. Check us out there. Pavel, thank you again. And we'll see you here again next time right here at Stack of Dice. I was reminded this evening beforehand of the quote from the beginning of Dumb and Dumber where Jim Carrey's character rolls up in a limousine and sees the attractive lady standing at the bus stop and he says, oh, lovely accent, New Jersey? So, but you've already told us that you're from Russia, so it was just kind of funny.
I do live in New Jersey currently, though, so technically this is also a New Jersey accent.
Sure, why not?